How many of you, it was the first time you ever fasted? One, two. I meant for Day of Atonement. One, three. Oh, yeah, right. They're born fasting. That's what they were having to them. They haven't stopped since. No. Last week, I went over the Aaron and his sons, and has to do direct relationship to today. That is the covering, Yom Kippurim, or called Day of Atonement. I want to backtrack just a little bit, just so we have some kind of a background. I've got 29 notes here, pages of notes. I don't plan to use them all. We will start out with Exodus, the 29th chapter. We're going to read a part of it. This has to do with Aaron and his sons. Remember, it took them 7 days of a continual atonement for them, to be able to reach the realm of the high priest, or in the realm of being a priest. Chapter 39 of Exodus, verse 1, this is what you should say to them, to hallow them for ministering to me as priest. Take one young bull, two rams without blemish, unleavened bread, unleavened cake, mixed with oil, and unleavened wafers, anointed oil. You shall make them of wheat flour. You shall put them in one basket and bring them to the basket and with the bull and the two rams. Now they're going to bring them. Verse 4. Aaron and his sons you shall bring to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and you shall wash them at water, and they shall make make their garments and put the tonic on Aaron and the robe of the ephod. The ephod and the breastplate, and gird them with the intrinsically woven band of the ephod. You shall put the turban on his head and put the holy crown on his turban. We talked about that last week. I don't need to talk about it now. Aaron and his sons, and you put the hats on them. The priest should be there. The priesthood shall be theirs for a perpetual statute. Therefore, you shall consecrate Aaron and his sons. Verse 10, you shall also have the bull brought before the tabernacle of meeting, and Aaron and his sons shall put their hands on the head of the bull. This particular chapter doesn't tell you what they tell you, but what they do, but we'll get into the Leviticus and tell you what they had to say. Well, understand that. Verse 11, you shall kill the bull before the Lord by the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and you shall take some of the blood of the bull and put it on the horns of the altar with your finger and pour all the base the blood of the base of this on the altar. Okay, now there's two different altars, by the way. If you're not, one of them is the burnt, one you burn the actual animal on. Okay, and generally with a whole offering or anything else to be completely burnt or cooked, it's going to be upon the altar that's on the outside, external to the altar. It also has four horns sticking out on it, too. But it's much, much bigger, and very made of stone, and that's covered with, I think it's brass or something of that nature, but rough hand, I can't remember. And this is where all this takes place, and the whole offering will be done on those at that location. Verse 13, you shall take of the fat of the cover of the internals and the fatty lobes of attached to the liver and the two kidneys and the fat that is on them and burn them on the altar. The flesh of the bull with its skin and its offal you shall burn with fire outside the camp. It is a sin offering. Now it's a little different, isn't it? So we're going to go into this thing about sin and sin offering, because this is what the day is all about. It's about sins, transgressions, and iniquities. And so we're talking about this, and we don't like to talk about sin, because sin's not a very good thing to talk about, right? Because it's very negative. Who wants to talk about sins? Well, we're not going to talk about sins in that fashion today. See how many pages I'm going through, so far gone. We're going to Exodus, the 30th chapter right now. Exodus 30th chapter. Here's the other altar. I read this last week. This particular altar is connected with the Day of Atonement. This particular altar, like the other one, but this one here has a very unique purpose. And we'll see what it has to see. All right? If not as big, it's much smaller. You shall make, verse 1, you shall make an altar to burn incense on. And that's what this is going to be used for. You shall make it of acacia wood. A cubic shall it be its width. A cubic this, I mean, its length. A cubic its width, and it shall be square. And 2 cubics shall be of its height. The horn shall be of one piece with it. The horns, they all be one piece. And you shall overlay its top, its sides, and the ground around, its horns, and its pure gold. And you shall make it of molten gold all around. 2 gold rings you shall make it, and under the molding of both its sides, you shall place them on its 2 sides, and you shall be holders for the pole which you bear it. So now we have this other altar. It's called the altar of incense. We have to keep this in mind, because I want you to keep in mind what takes place. Because now there's something you have to burn on this altar. Obviously it is what?
Incense.
Now, I remember last week I told you there was a certain formula. And only a certain formula is to be used at this particular place, at this particular altar. And you cannot use this formula for any other reason. All right? The same formula, which you will read here later, you'll find out the ingredients is very exactly the same which Aaron had to use when he went into the Holy of Holies. This is why that formula is not to be put together for any other use except that one use only. All right? It's holy unto God. It's sanctified by God. It's something that God has said, this is mine. It belongs to me. This is how you're going to do it. And nobody else is going to do it except Aaron and his priesthood. And that's the end of the story. If anybody else does it, what will happen to them? Do you remember what happened last week?
They'll be cut off
from the house of Israel. Now in the Christian world, believe it or not, you'd be cut off. In the Jewish world, you'd be cut off. The Messianic world will be cut off if you start messing around with things that God says not to. All right? But this oil, excuse me, this particular incense is for the purpose of something and very special purpose. Drop down to verse 10. Aaron shall make an atonement upon it, its horns, once a year with the blood of the sin offering of atonement. Now, here's the only time when this particular altar, the altar of sin, incense rather, is used, and this is the only time blood will be put upon this altar. Only once. And guess what time that happens? Happens the Day of Atonement. Alright? I'm giving you background information so you have a little bit of picture of what this is all about, because we don't go back and look at it. We say, okay, I know the story, so what? Who cares? No, we can't do that. We have to go back because God says, in due season, I want you to go back and I want you to tell the people again what they have heard and hear and tell them again to teach them that they will not forget my statutes and my judgments. Which you know I've been preaching about quite regularly here lately, right? Go to verse 34, same chapter. This is the incense. This is the 34, verse 34 of the 30th chapter of Exodus. Lord spoke to Moses, take sweet spices, I can't pronounce these words right, sakte, is that right? Oyika and gabanum and pure frankincense with these sweet spices, there shall be equal amounts of each. So there's an equal amount. He didn't tell you the formula of how much. Let's say a cup and a cup and a cup, or a hind and a hind and a hind. Whatever measurement you're going to use, you're going to use that entire mount. So on Day of Atonement, you probably would have a whole lot more in this mixture. You shall make of it this instant a compound according to the act of the perfumer, salted, pure, and holy. You shall beat some of it very fine and put some of it before the testimony. What is the testimony? The Ark of the Covenant, okay, which is in the Holy of Holies, okay. So now we have this fine. Now we'll get into Leviticus 16th chapter, and you'll recognize the words. Here, this particular stuff is used for one reason and one reason only. It is holy unto God, and He has it for a reason. We'll get to the Messiah in the future. Just hold off. In the tabernacle meeting, there will be met with you. It shall be the most holy to you. Now let's go to Leviticus 16th chapter. I spend most of the rest of the time in 16th chapter and Hebrews. We all kind of know the story, but I want you to pay attention to the story. Okay, I know you've heard the story, but listen to it. All right? And what does Shema mean?
Hear.
With intentness. Hear with carefulness. Hear and know what the Lord, Creator of heaven and earth, has to say. All right? The Lord said to Moses, verse 1 rather, now the Lord spoke to Moses, after the death of his two sons, they were offered profane fire before the Lord and died. We won't go into what that is today. That's not part of the subject matter. Verse 2, the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron, your brother, not to come into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat, which is on the ark, lest he die, for I'll appear in a cloud above the mercy seat. Now, we know this is talking about the inner tabernacle, right? The Holy of Holies, the smaller one that's inside. No one allowed to go inside. It's kind of like a hidden thing. It's kind of like a secret. There's something behind this veil that's, when you open it up, it's going to reveal something to you. It's going to show you something. It's going to teach you something. And God, we know, put these earthly things here for us to understand something that has to do with heavenly things. All right? Now, there's something very interesting about this holy place. It has to be sanctified. Now, this is very careful. We'll go in the book of Hebrews, not immediately. But a lot of Messianic movements believe that the book of Hebrews should be banished. Because there is a statement that they do not understand. And this says, yes, it did occur. It only occurs once a year. But blood is the thing that is used to sanctify not only the tabernacle, which must be sanctified with the blood, and not only the one of the vessels, which is the golden vessel that holds the incense, must have blood put upon it once a year, sanctified. And this book first tells you, this chapter first tells you that what required is a sanctification of those holy things first with the blood before the continuation of the Day of Atonement. Verse 3. Thus Aaron shall come to the holy place with the blood of the young bull as a sin offering and a ram as a whole offering. Now there's two different ones, right? One's a sin offering, one's the blood of the sin offering, that one is just the whole offering. He brings him before the tabernacle. Okay, these are the two. You shall put the holy linen garment on and the linen trousers in his body. He shall be girded with the linen sash and with the linen turban. He shall be attired. These are holy garments. We'll talk about holiness in a minute. Because people, this is where you're going. You're going from here up to purity. All right? That's what this day is all about. Aaron shall offer the bull as a sin offering, which is for himself, and make an atonement for himself in his house. So first things first is what? He has to take the blood, and he has to do something with it. He atones for himself, the priesthood, and his family. He shall take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle, and Aaron shall cast lots upon the two goats. One lot for the Lord, the other lot for the scapegoat. Aaron shall bring a goat. Aaron shall bring the goat which the Lord's lot fell and offer it as a sin offering. So we have a bull offering, and now we have a goat offering. Both have one thing in common, is to do something. And we'll see if you follow along. Because so far we're just getting an introduction here. The goat, verse 10, on which the lot fell upon the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make an atonement, to make a kippur, to make a covering. We'll find out what that particular goat does. Make an atonement upon it and let the scapegoat go in the wilderness. And Aaron shall bring, verse 11, Aaron shall bring the bull of the sin offering, which is for himself, and make an atonement for himself and his house, and he shall kill the bull as a sin offering, which is for himself. Then he shall take the censer full of burnt coals and fire from the altar before the Lord, that is the altar that has to do the burning, not the golden censer, and his hands will full of sweet censer, beaten fine, and bring that inside the veil. I'm sorry, that is the one. He brings it from that veil. And he shall put the incense on the fire before the Lord, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is upon the
testimony.
What's the testimony?
The ark.
So what?
The ark.
Okay, no, the ark controls has a testimony. Christian world knows what it means. I'm going to give you a testimony. A witness, a piece of evidence. What's in that? A piece of evidence. What's the evidence? The covenant. The covenant is the evidence. You agree. This is it. The tablets are there. They're in there. That is the testimony. That is the proof. That is the evidence. That's the testimony. You testified you would do it. That's what you testified to. That's what the simple word means. All right? You know, in the law of court, guess what? You'd be found guilty if you disagree with it. With agreement, you just got to agree with it. If the judge says guilty, you got to pay the fine, you know, whatever it is. Now, once a year, this will be done on the golden altar, just as it was used here. That's what incense did. What does incense represent in the book of Revelations? The what? The prayers of the saints. That's why it's holy unto God. That's why you don't mix anything with it. You don't come up with any other approach. Now, God says there's a certain formula. Listen, people. There's a certain formula for that incident. He's not going to accept any other kind of formula. Do you understand what I'm saying? You want to contact God, you want to reach God, you want to pray to God, you want your prayers entered into heaven, you want God to hear them, you better do it according to the formula. Does that make sense? That's why he went out of his way. Last week I told you, I'm going to talk about this. I want you to understand this is important. We have to find out by the will of God. We have to ask God. We have to bring ourselves toward God and says, what is the formula? Well, you know, Jesus gives us information, doesn't he? We'll get there. Maybe today. I don't know. Pray in this manner. Do, 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 do. What is the formula, people? Too many times to pray about ourselves. What did it say? That old prayer? Our Father who art in heaven. Formula number one. Hallowed is your name, formula number two. Thy kingdom come, formula number three. Big priority. Now you go on and you tell God what else you had in mind. You know? If you were going before, put your political thoughts behind you and dump them for a moment. If you're going before the President of the United States, how would you address him? Hi, George. No, you wouldn't do that. You called him what? Mr. President. If you give that much respect to a flesh and blood human being, can't you give that much respect to the Creator of heaven and earth? You should at least give him that much respect. All right? We have certain formulas. Now, the ingredients can be more, but it must be an equal amount. Yes?
Are we allowed commentary?
Not yet. Because I want to get on to this one subject matter first. Verse 11. And Aaron shall bring the bull, the sin offering, which is for himself and for the atonement for himself, house and sin offering. I read that part. I'll go verse 14. No, I'm going to go to verse 15. And he shall kill the goat of the sin offering, which is for the people, bring the blood inside the veil, so that the blood, so he did with the blood of the bull, and sprinkle upon the mercy seat and before the mercy seat. He shall make atonement for the holy place. First priority. Not atonement for anything else except first take this blood of the bull and take the blood of the goat and make an atonement, a covering, a kippur for the holy place. So you can't come along and say, well, in Hebrews is wrong because they said that almost all things were sanctified by blood, and they quote few things that didn't get sanctified because they're quoting the wrong section of Exodus. They're not quoting all of Moses. The veil was built with blood. The only thing it was that's built with blood, the showbread table, no blood put on it. Candlestick, no blood was put upon it. What else did not have blood on it? Everything in that entire tabernacle, outside and inside, guess what? It was sanctified by blood. We'll get the book of Hebrews about that right now, pretty soon. Okay, Daniel, what's your comment?
Four ingredients.
I'm sorry?
Four ingredients.
The four? I'm sorry, the four. I thought it was the three. That's right, four. I said only said three, right?
Four. The there are four.
And what's the next one?
Fact there are four ingredients.
There's four things.
Brings the mind or brings your attention to the four ways, the four winds, the four angles. That's what classifies somebody four. As a saint, to someone who is a follower of God with all of their either
eyes,
heart,
everything,
their mind, or
everything,
their soul, or their deeds.
Right.
And all four, you have
all
to have
four.
Equal amounts, that no one is greater than the other.
Four is a very interesting number, biblically speaking. It's very fascinating. Has everything, huh? Yeah, that's a good point. Good thing you brought that out. I didn't think about that. I'll continue on verse 16 though. He shall make atonement for the holy place because of uncleanliness. Not of the holy place, but uncleanliness of the children of Israel, of their transgressions, and of their sins. Okay? Now, see, we're reaching this day of atonement. We read it here. We'll keep a fine on. This is the day you are to fast. This is the day you are to afflict your soul. This is the day you are to, quote, suffer, in a quote. And it tells you why. And if you ever wonder, why did God want to do this? It tells you right here in the book of Leviticus, 16th chapter. It tells you. You may not like it. Well, wait a minute. Maybe you will. Because, see, it's a blessing. This is a blessing for the entire world, people. The entire world's going to have this great, awesome blessing. This is not just for you. We're at the end of this year. We're at the end of the season. We're at the third season, which is for the season of bringing in the entire world into the realm of the Creator of heaven and earth. They will be purified, though their sins may be filthy, horrible. You can't stand them. Inequities is the worst part of all sins. It's deliberately going against God with all your grief, with all your effort, with all your energy. Hating with every point of your point, or your body. That's what inequity stands for. Maybe none of you reached that point. But you know, I know you know some people who have. And you hope that they may, by the grace and the will of God. Not by the people responding. Because this is not the day for the people to respond. This is the day for God to respond. That they will cover it up. Everlasting. Verse 17, there shall be no man in the tabernacle of the meeting when he goes into the make the atonement of the holy place until he comes out, that he may make atonement for himself, his household, and for all the house of Israel. He had no eyewitness. There was no one there to prove that he actually did this job. No one was there, just the high priest. His son wasn't there. His assistant wasn't there. Nobody was there. It was between him and the Creator and nobody else. And if he entered that Holy of Holies the wrong direction, the wrong way, he'd be dead. That's what it says, right? Now think of the Messiah. Think of the Messiah in this point. Because he said, if you enter into that without this procedure, Aaron, I'm going to kill you. All right? Kind of terrifying thought if you're high priest, right? Verse 18. He should go into the altar before it. He shall go out into the altar, which is before the Lord, and make an atonement on it. He shall take some of the blood of the bull and some of the blood of the goat and put it on the horns of the altar all around. That's the golden altar. Verse 19. And he shall sprinkle some of the blood on it with his fingers 7 times, cleanse it, and sanctify it, that golden altar, for the uncleanness of the children of Israel. Now, if you don't believe this, talk about the golden altar. Go back to where I just got the reading about the golden altar, 10th verse. Once a year, you shall put blood upon this one. That's the only time. He's not talking about the big, huge one that you burn things on and you spill blood all the place on it. That's done daily or done weekly, done all quite often. We're talking just that one altar, that golden altar. The book of Hebrews says it was sanctified. All things are sanctified. Almost all things are sanctified in the tabernacle, in the Holy of Holies. And with the people. We won't go there yet. But just that whole picture's bigger, isn't it? Alright, now let's go a little deeper. When he has made the end of the atoning of the holy place, the tabernacle and the meeting and the altar, those three things, three things he must do. We also know it all took place. He also included the altar, didn't it? That golden altar. Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat, confess over it all the and what is the difference? I told you the definition of one of them, right? What's the definition of transgression and the definition of sin? Think Hebrew words, please. One is missing the mark. Which one?
Sin.
What is transgression?
Going against the law.
Breaking the law itself, knowing you broke the law. What's iniquity? Yeah, I know what the law says, and do blankety blank with it. Okay. Now he says, guess what? All three are not laid on the altar, No blood is spilt for that. No blood is spilt for... What happens? What happens? The goat takes it. A totally innocent, clean animal has no knowledge of what's going to happen to him. Have no knowledge. Just an animal. Ordinary animal. They call him the scapegoat. Where did he escape from? He escaped from being the blood sacrifice. He escaped from the one to being of the sin offering. He is the one that escaped from having to have his life being taken for covering of the atonement of the Holy of Holies. Do you understand what I'm saying? He wasn't used to cover the Holy of Holies. He was used to remove something. Entirely different process. Entirely different thing. And putting them on the head of the goat, and shall send it to away in a wilderness by the hand of a suitable man. That goat shall bear on itself all of their iniquities to an uninhabited land, and he shall release the goat in the wilderness. Now, in Jewish tradition, they have killed this animal, which is contrary to what it is written. They should never have killed it. They should never have thrown it off the cliff. They should have done exactly what is written. Why? Because it tells you something. What does it tell you? That the sins, the transgressions, and iniquities are no longer going to be part of your life. It's gone forever into another place, another world where you don't live, they don't live, no one lives. And people, when the world becomes to understand all this stuff, guess what they're going to be going in? They're entering into the tabernacle of God, and they'll be with the tabernacle of God. What is their sins at? They're, and it says in Revelations, they're without. They're outside of. Right? Now listen carefully. When the sin offering is there, certain things are put on the altar for be burnt. The other, I mean, to be used as a whole offering. The other one, part of it is the skin and all that stuff. What happens to it? Be burnt outside of the camp. Not outside of the tabernacle. Outside the dwelling place where the camp is at. Sin is eliminated and removed. Never to be seen or heard of or known of again. And that's the promise. That's what this day represents. That's what this day is for. Now we'll get to the book of Hebrews here in just a minute. Now, verse 29. Thus the statute forever. In the seventh month, on the tenth day of the month, you shall afflict your souls and do no work at all, whether a native or of your own, or a country, a native of your own country, or a stranger. Why? This is the reason, people. If you don't know why you have to fast today, this is the reason. For on that day, the priest shall make an atonement for you to cleanse you, that you may be clean before all your sins before the Lord. That's why you do it. Do you have any questions? Read it. Do you believe what it says? I hope so. You'll be what?
Cleansed.
Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Three greatest weaknesses of human beings. Right? If you see a rabbit, it'll be Sabbath unto you. Verse 33, he shall make an atonement for the holy sanctuary, meaning the same thing, of the Holy of Holies. He shall make an atonement for the tabernacle of meeting and for the altar, and he shall make an atonement for the priest and for the whole people of the assembly. This shall be done an everlasting statute for you. This is a statute, Bill. This is one of the statutes, right? Okay. And, but I just lost my thought there. And for all your sins, once a year, as he did, so he, Aaron, did as Moses told him to do. Okay. Hebrews. Well, look at Hebrews. The function of two goats has two things going for us, right? One of them sanctifies the Holy of Holies. The other one removes your sins, your iniquities, and your transgressions. And there are two rams. I won't dig into that today. Also on this day.
Did you want Hebrews 1?
Hebrews 1. Hebrews chapter 1. The man who wrote the book of Hebrews, I consider one of the most well-educated men when it comes to knowing about the Feast of Tabernacles, Day of Atonement, Passover, you name it. He centers in, though, on one specific holy day. He centers in on the Day of Atonement. That's his whole goal. And this day has more than just your sins being removed, people. This day has something which I hope you'll hear me today. Because technically speaking, it has yet to come. It's already come into your lives, but not for the world. And it's going to come. Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1. God, who at various times and various ways spoke in times past to the fathers by the prophets, has these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, through whom also he has made the worlds, who bringing the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person, upholding the things by the word of his power, he has purged sins, sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high, having become so much better than the angels, as he has by inheritance obtained an excellent name than they. Who was the names in the Tanakh of the angels, as you remember, who well know?
Michael
and Gabriel and
cherubim.
Now, along comes this one. He says his name is going to be greater than theirs, right? Oh, surpass the name of Michael. What does Michael mean?
Who is like God?
Oh, Michael must be like God? No, that's just his name. There's somebody else that's like God. Now, one name that goes above the name of Michael. The Michael, we remember. Michael's a good name. Michael stands up for the house of Israel. Michael stands up for the Jews. Michael stands up. He's going to fight. We know what it says there in the book of Revelation, but there's another name that's greater than his. And we'll talk about that. It's a cool word. You know what Yahshua means, right? Yah saves. Or salvation of God. And basically that's what this is heading for. The book of Hebrews is going to explain that to you. Hope you understand. Bear with me. Chapter 2. Therefore we must not, verse 1, give more earnest heed to the things we have heard, lest we drift away. For if the word spoken through the angels, remember I said they're big names, prove steadfast in every transgression and disobedience received a just reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? Big name, isn't it? Salvation. Big name here, right? Whether we're beings, Yahweh means, Yahshua means salvation. Or God saves, or Yah saves. How shall we escape if we neglect such great salvation, which at the first began to speak about us, to be spoken by the Lord, was consumed to us by those who heard him. Confirmed to us by those who heard us, heard him. God also hearing, also being a witness both to the signs and the wonders, and various miracles and gifts and the Holy Spirit according to his own. Verse 14. No, we can't neglect what we're doing. Why does, by the way, Hebrews is very careful. I think there's something like 5 or 6 warnings to already baptized people. Be careful. Kind of like Moses, right? Be careful. If you neglect such a thing, what's going to happen to you? You're not going to be there. It's not a shoe-in. Alright. 14. Inasmuch as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, he himself, meaning the Messiah, likewise shared in the same, that through death he might destroy him who has the power of death, that is, the devil, and release those who are fear of death, where death were all of their lifetime subject to bondage. For indeed, verse 16, he does not give aid to angels. It's important to hear this. Some people believe that angels who have sinned against God will have a chance to repent. That's not what it says here. He's not going to help them. Aid means a form of help. He's not going to step in for them. He's not going to step in and say, oh, well, you know, I'm going to take my spirit life, take it away so your spirit life remain. No, they won't. Their spirit life will perish. We won't go into that today. I want you to put that in there because this particular author understands that. But he does give aid to the seed of Abraham. Therefore, verse 17, in all things he has made like his brethren, that he might be merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God and to make propitiation or atonement for the sins of people. Verse 18. For in that he himself was suffered, in the stuff that he has suffered, being tempted, he is able to aid those who are tempted. No one has a cop out saying, okay, I don't have, he's better than me anyway. No, he said he had run the same thing. Hebrews 8th chapter. Go to Hebrews 8th chapter. Verse 1. Now this is the main point. Oh, now we're getting to the point, right? That we are saying, we have such a high priest who sits at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heavens, a ministry of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle, which the Lord erected and not man. We have to keep in mind now, we're talking about a tabernacle. A tabernacle that Moses had to copy. The tabernacle existed prior. The outer tabernacle we think of and the inner tabernacle we think of, it existed prior. The whole picture. And Moses is told to make sure you make it exactly. Verse 3. Every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices. There is a necessity that this one, meaning the Messiah, Jesus, also something to offer. Now, where is he going to offer it at? He's not going to offer it at the tabernacle made by human hands. He's going to offer it at the tabernacle made by the Creator of heaven and earth. That's where he is going to offer it. So what is he going to offer there? What?
Himself.
He's going to give gifts and sacrifices. That's what he's going to do, right? So who's he going to give to his father?
Himself.
Apostle Paul said in Corinthians, when he has put all authority under his feet and subjection, then he will give the kingdom unto his Father. That's the ultimate gift. And what does God want you to do? What does Jesus say he wants us to do? Seek you what? First what?
The kingdom
of God and
his righteousness.
Now, when you have that and you are doing that, are you a curse to God or are you a blessing to God? God said, I will glorify you. That's a big statement. I will glorify you. Wow. Have you ever thought that the Creator of heaven and earth would glorify you? Oh, yeah. That's what he said he's going to do. Why would he? Is he a liar? No, he's not a liar. He's going to tell you the truth. He's going to praise you. He's going to say all sorts of nice things to you. What do you think the Aaronic blessing is all about? Aaronic blessings is that. The whole statement is where the Creator is saying that right to you. Right to your face. Actually, it's the Messiah saying to your face. And he said, there's a smile. His countenance will come upon you and smile. Wouldn't you like the Creator smile? Wouldn't you? That's what the whole thing's all about, right? Listen, people, the whole world is going to receive this whole thing. But first they have to move up to this place where their sins are what? White as snow. They have to be white as snow. You may feel today you are, and your sins are white as snow. But what about where we're heading next week in a few more days? We're heading for where? Feast of Tabernacles. And what is the Feast of Tabernacles game for? Is it just to put a bunch of sukkahs out there? Remember the past? No, every one of the whole days is for what? Things to come. And we also know that Egypt in the third year will come to keep the feast. Now what does three represent? A little more specific. Death and resurrection. Alright. Put that in that picture. Death and resurrection. It's kind of cool, isn't it? Those 3 years, it's still the same picture. Three is a very unique number. Verse 4. For he were on earth, that is, if the Messiah was on earth, he would not have been a priest. He would never, ever fulfill the function of a priest. He could not fulfill the function of a priest. He was not allowed to fulfill the function of a priest. How come he couldn't fulfill the function of a priest?
He wasn't of the line of Aaron.
No? Who?
He wasn't of the line of Aaron.
Wasn't the line of Aaron. So he doesn't qualify at all to enter into the Holy of Holies with the blood of the bull, the blood of the goat, and the incense, because he wasn't qualified. Why? Because that was an earthly tabernacle. And therefore, it took an earthly man to be able to enter into that earthly tabernacle, because that tabernacle was made by the hands of man. Now, you go into heaven, all of a sudden, there's a different picture. All right? See, he could not. But, of course, we don't go into today the priesthood of Melchizedek. Priest of Melchizedek is a heavenly thing, heavenly priesthood. It is not an earthly thing. It's not of this earth. Never had been the earth. And you know, it may be hard for some people to understand this. But when Abraham met him, he was called the priest of El Elyon. That's different than just a priest. Verse 5, who served the copy of the shadow of the heavenly things, that Moses was divinely instructed he was about to take the tabernacle, or to make a tabernacle, he said, see that you do everything according to the pattern shown you. verse 6. But now he, meaning Jesus or Yeshua, has obtained a more excellent ministry, inasmuch as that he is also mediator of a what? When did he become the mediator of a better covenant? When did he become the mediator of a better covenant?
When he
what?
When he rose from the dead.
Today. Today he entered into the Holy of Holies that's in heaven, not on earth. This day represents the act of the Creator of heaven and earth and not anything else. He fulfills every function, every single holiday. He's got a cover for everything. He could only die once. Passover time, we got that. That was the first. Remember, the first, and then there's the last. What does he say? The last shall be first, and the first shall be last. He's going to fulfill all the functions, including the eighth day, which is the last. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm excited about this stuff. I think one of the greatest days for mankind, not just for the Jewish people, not just for Messianic people, for the entire world. This is hope, unspeakable hope, because that's where the world's heading. The world doesn't know it. They're blind. Yes. Were you blind before you knew? Yeah, you were blind before you knew. Now you're not so blind. Are you happy you're not blind? Yes. But don't be upset, angry, irritated, frustrated with others who are blind. So what? A minister on radio doesn't understand. He's way off some kind of tangent. Don't worry about it. Because this is the will of the Creator, not your will. This is a will. We'll get to that will. Because Hebrews talks about a will. Not a will you write things out on. But thy will be done. Alright? When he walked in, not into the earthly function, but in a heavenly function, he's opening up that door. And Hebrews says something very plainly. Listen carefully. For if the first covenant had been flawless, if it will work, if it was planned, if it was part of the plan, and been flawless, there would no place be sought to find a second one. But guess what? The second one was already established in heaven before Moses saw the first image. See, God has a picture so great that man can't picture it, because sometimes we're so narrowing ourselves down with the story of the Exodus, the story of the building the tabernacle, the story of the Ten Commandments. We don't picture what Apostle Paul and everybody else said, and this guy said, of things to come, greater, far greater than that world could ever imagine. There is hope for mankind. Even the person, your closest friend, your lover, the ones that you care about, the ones, your children, your mom, your dad, your grandpa, your grandma, there's hope for them. But today is your day of salvation. Theirs is yet to come. So today you respond to the salvation. It's not once saved, always saved. You are always in the state and always should be in the state of remaining in that state of salvation. And it says that here in the book of Hebrews. So I said the writer of Hebrews understood an awful lot about the holy days. And especially the end section of the holy days. Now, verse 8, because finding fault with them, because it's earthly tabernacle, You put those things in the hands of man, it's going to work, right? Lust of flesh, lust of eyes, the pride of life just dominate the entire scene. No matter how much you want to get rid of it, you can't get rid of it. You know, Apostle Paul said, I die daily. And he really did have to die daily because he had to die the lust of flesh, lust of eyes, the pride of life. Like all of us do. I will make a new covenant. The house of Israel. Today is the beginning of the new covenant. The new covenant didn't begin at Passover. It started, but doesn't come to a conclusion. Doesn't come to an end. For today is a day he is going to make a new covenant. Now, sometimes we look and say, you mean those Jews over there in Israel? They haven't got it yet. You mean those Ephraimites over here? They haven't got it. The Massanites over there, or wherever you think you believe, you know, the Danites, name one of the tribes. No, they haven't got it yet. They haven't received it yet. My question to you is, have you? Okay. I mentioned last week, you are the leadership. Not the leadership of tomorrow, but of today. And the people that you care about the most are the ones you are showing leadership to. How? By doing what the statutes tell you to do. And you have good reason behind it. You know why. This picture is great. This picture is fantastic. And you know it. Although your friends don't know it, they don't know it, you try to preach the gospel to them. Don't. Just live it. Just live the gospel. Live the holidays. Live the day of, live this day. live Sabbath. Make it part of your life so much that that's it. That's part of you. There's no separation between you and it. It you are all like one. They're hot. Now they're gonna come up. I know a lot of you have had family who said, no, 40 years later. Oh, now I guess you have a point. And they come along. That happens, doesn't it? 40 years is a long time, isn't it? 40 years is a number that God uses quite often. But I want you to keep in mind that this day is not just a day that we enter in and the sins of the world pass away. God is heading the whole world to the gospel. By and through today. Today's introduction. The whole world is going to recognize this when the time comes. Well, there's going to be some bloodshed, some sorrows, there's going to be trial, there's going to be difficulties, there's going to be difficult times ahead. That's to be expected. But since God is in control, I know I'm long. And everybody's still awake so far. Let's go to the ninth chapter. Verse 1. Then indeed, even the first covenant had ordinance of divine service and earthly sanctuary. Now this author is not condemning. And some people believe he is condemning the first covenant. He had not done it. He says, no, it had divine ordinances. It had divine things to be carried out. They were ordered by God, the creator of heaven and earth. For the tabernacle was prepared, the first, as it was the lampstand, the table, and the showbread, which is called what? The sanctuary, the whole picture, but not the Holy of Holies. All right. And he's now behind the second veil. Why are there two veils? What's the first veil? He says the second veil, right? What's the first veil? All right. Tabernacle. There was the big tabernacle. There was a veil in front or a curtain in front of the big tabernacle. You couldn't walk straight in. You had to go around it and then go into it because it was concealing evidence. It was hiding things. It was hidden that the world that was not part of Israel would not be part of what was happening. Now we have a second veil. And behind it, something is hidden. Who got to go behind that one? The high priest. And how often did he do it?
Once a year.
Once a year. More difficult. Right? More difficult to get there. Now along comes, he said, now behind the second veil, that hidden veil, the one that is in heaven. God, remember, it's exactly the same image. Oh, you mean there's a veil that's up there in heaven also in the Holy of Holies? Yeah. That's where he copied it from, right? Same picture. And he says, it is called the Holiest of All, which the golden censer and the Ark of the Covenant overlaid the ash aside, the gold, and so on and so forth. You get a picture? All right. I'm going to move on to rapidly now. There was so much stuff I'd like to cover today, but I'm not going to cover it. I want to go to chapter 10 of Hebrews. Chapter 10, verse 1. For the law, the Torah, having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the thing, can never with these same sacrifices, which they offered annually, year by year, make those who approached perfect, for when they had not ceased to be offered. For the worshiper, once purified, would not have any more reason to do it. Once you're purified, guess what? Once you're holy, you're holy. You don't have to do it anymore. Alright. Verse 5. Therefore, when he came into the world, meaning Jesus, he said, what did he say? Sacrifices and offering you did not desire. That's not what you really wanted. That's not what you really wanted. What did you want? A body. What do you want a body for? Body would eliminate sins, transgressions, iniquity, and your sins be as white as scarlet, would scarlet rather be as white as snow. He needed a human being. He needed a flesh and blood human being to walk into there. And when he did that, when he died, walked in that veil, we get to peek inside, don't we? We get to see what God is all about. We get to see what he thinks. We get to see what he pictures. We get to see his world. We get to be in his world. That's what it's all about. That's why when he says his statutes, his judgment are written in your heart and your mind, he means those, not the Ten Commandments. You understand that? I hope you do. For the burnt offering, and sin offering, you have no pleasure. But then I, Jesus is talking out loud here. This is the book of Psalms. We won't go there right now. Behold, I come in the volume of the book. It is written of me. What book? In the book of the Torah. That's where it's written. To do your will. I want to keep this word, will. See that word, will? Verse 8. Previously saying, sacrifice and offering and burnt offerings and offerings of sin you do not desire nor pleased with them. Then which were offered according to the law, then he said, behold, I have come unto you, do your will. He takes, listen carefully to this verse. He takes away the first that he may establish the second. By that will. What will?
The will of God.
We're going to go farther than that. Jesus had made a statement. What was his statement? Thy will be done and not mine. His will wanted not to take the cup. But he submitted his will to God, making his will equal with the will of God. John, 7th chapter, verse 17. Don't have to turn there. Write down your notes. Is if anyone wills to do his will, mean the Father, he shall know concerning the doctrine whether it is from me or whether it is of my own authority. Now, you know, sometimes we take the death of Jesus for granted because, you know, it happened, okay. But on the other hand, it's his will. He became the will of his Father. Can you become the will of your Father? It's pretty tough, isn't it? But he's not required the same thing of you that he required of him because, see, you weren't that body that was that perfect. But his will is to what? His will is to cover something up. And what is he to cover with? With the blood that sanctifies the holy place. When the sanctified the holy place, that means that place can be entered. And it can only be entered in by holy people. Cannot be entered in by unholy people. Only be entered in by holy people. And the holy people can only enter in if they have the commandments, statutes, and judgments written in their heart and in their mind. That's where God's headed you. And you all know that. As you know, he's doing the whole world. Yom Kippurim is plurality. The reason I use plurality because there's two coverings here. Ones that we see physically took place, time of Aaron, and the other one that the Messiah did. Two coverings. That's why I use the word plurality on it. So you think of two different pictures here. The one that was and the one that is to come. All right, you got the picture? I'm going to go to one more place and I'll call it quits. I know you're getting tired. But I have a very important chapter to read. Psalms, 40th chapter. It's not too super long. For this chapter. You still awake?
Not much.
Nap time coming up, people. I want you to put this in the picture. We're talking, this is the Messiah psalm. This is not David's psalm. David was a man who was after God's own heart. That does not mean that he was in love with God. That meant he was after the heart of God. And when he wrote the Psalms, he's writing the heart of God, not his. You understand that? That's why he has said he's a man after God's own heart, because he was designated by God, because God called him at 17 years old and said, that's the man after my own heart. I'm going to make him a man after my own heart. I'm going to have him, the you world, the world, all the world know exactly my feelings deep inside. All right? And not just a bunch of emotional songs about David and all his trials and error. We're talking about the Messiah. We're talking about God. We're talking about God. Remember I talked about Noah? How God actually was in sorrow and pain and agony. And he was upset. It hurt him. Pained him. That's the heart of God. He actually has feelings, by the way. We are created after his image. We should have some kind of that. 40. I wait patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me. He heard my cry. He also brought me up out of the horrible pit, out of the murky clay, and set my feet upon a rock, established my steps. He has put my new song in my mouth, praise to our God. Many will see and will fear, and will trust in the Lord. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust and does not respect the proud, nor such as turn aside to lie. May, O Lord, my God, are you a wonder? Many, O Lord, my God, are your wondrous works which you have done, and your thoughts toward us cannot be recounted. To you in order, if I were declared and spoke to them, they were more than I can number. Sanctify an offering you did not desire. My ears you have opened, whole offerings and sin offerings you did not desire. Then I said, behold, I come, in the scroll of the book it is written of me. I delight to do your will, O my God, and your law is ever in my heart. I have proclaimed the good news of righteousness in the great assembly. Indeed, I do not restrain my lips, O Lord. You yourself know I have not hidden your righteousness within my heart. I have declared your faithfulness, your salvation. I have not concealed your loving kindness, your truth from the great assembly. Do not withhold your tender mercies from me, O Lord. Let your loving kindness and your truth continually preserve me, for innumerable evils have surrounded me. My iniquities have overtaken me so that I am not able to look up. They are more than the hairs of my head. Therefore, my heart fails me. Oh, please, O Lord, do deliver me. O Lord, make haste and help me. Let them be ashamed who brought to mutual confusion. Who seek to destroy my life, let them be driven backward and brought to dishonor. Who wish me evil, let them be comforted because of their shame. Who say to me, aha. Let all those who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. Let such as your love, your salvation say continually, the Lord is merciful, but I am poor and needy. Yet the Lord thinks upon me. You are my help, my deliverer. Do not delay, O my God. His iniquities wasn't his. It was ours. They were heavy for him. And not just for you. What did John say? Here's the one that takes sins away for the whole world. He takes them away. That's the function of the second goat. Takes them away. They're out of your life. They don't live anymore. They're not part of you. They cease to be. God be with you all. God bless you all.